available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Lots to get to today on the show. We're going to focus our spring report on the University of Utah, the Utes. So we have Dan Sorensen on the line. We're going to talk with him. If you have any questions for us, best way to get a hold of us, you can email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to text us or send us a voicemail, you can do that too by calling or texting 424-532-0678. Of course, our Twitter account is at pac12podcast if you want to tweet with us throughout the week. And our website where you can find all of our episodes is pac12podcast.com. You can find everything up there, all of our contact information as well. And if you're on iTunes or any podcasting app, please subscribe. Give us a good rating, five-star review. All that stuff is great. And tell your friends. You got some friends that enjoy Pac-12 football. Let them know about our little show. We do appreciate it. We're doing shows every week throughout the offseason. We're getting towards the end, I think, of our spring reports. And we're excited to talk to Dan Sorensen today about the Utah Utes. But let's welcome in Dan. Dan, how you doing, man?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Can't complain. Can't complain. How is it in how is sunny Utah these days?
Sunny Utah has not been so sunny the last few days, but things are trending upward. So it's going to be a very nice week to go cover spring practice, I think. We're going to hit 70 degrees for the first time this year. The players are excited. The media is definitely excited. It should be a good thing.
How long have you guys been in spring ball now? Because we've talked to some people who still haven't started, some people who are already done. We're looking at you, ASU. Where's Utah now in its stretch of spring?
So Utah is just starting its third week of spring practice. They actually started on March 5th. So they practiced for the week, and then they took a week off for spring break. They were back at it again last week with the pads coming on, and they're in the thick of it beginning this week. They'll go all the way until mid-April. Spring game is on April 13th, if I remember correctly.
Nice. All right. So people, if you're not familiar with Dan, it's Dan Sorensen. You can follow him on Twitter at D Sorensen, S-O-R-E-N-S-E-N. He is the publisher for UteZone.com, which is our Utah site here on the 24/7 Sports Network. And Dan does a great job covering the
Utah Utes.
I remember the
You drop. Remembered! Woo-hoo! You remembered!
Yes. Remember the drop. We're trying to, you know, get a little breakdown for every school. Sometimes we talk to them during spring, after spring, before spring, whatever it is. But Utah, you know, like Dan said, they're already kind of rolling right here. Before we jump into like what spring football is, Dan, what did you think about Utah's recruiting class coming into the spring and some of the pieces that that Kyle Whittingham added this offseason?
I thought it was a good, not great class. It was a really strange class. You know, they of course whiffed on a quarterback. The quarterback that they had targeted is now at Arizona State, which was a big loss for them because he went to a conference and an in division rival. But at the same time, you know, they were able to meet a lot of needs. They were able to land Southern California running back four-star Jordan Wilmore at the very end, which was a big win. They got four-star JUCO offensive lineman Bamil Asseni, who's one of their better recruits, and he's a guy that they think can step in and start right away. Sata Olaumea, the four-star offensive lineman out of Southern California, they were able to close on him pretty late. And so, you know, they were able to get a lot of pieces. They got some help from the transfer portal, which I think really improved their recruiting class. They got Manny Bowen, the graduate transfer from Penn State, the linebacker. He's a guy that was a part-time starter at Penn State with Utah losing a couple of linebackers to the NFL. He's a guy that should step in and start right away. He's looked really good so far this spring. And even though they missed out on their quarterback, they were still able to get a quarterback through the transfer portal and former four-star Texas signee Cameron Rising, who's also a Southern California guy. And so he's on campus now. He's competing. They're going to file for a waiver to see if they can get him in the mix right away. But, you know, but overall it was a good class. Good depth, good job filling their needs, maybe a little top heavy. Some of the guys that are on the bottom rating of the class maybe aren't the rating that some Utah fans would have wanted. But when you look at average star rating, I think it's still the best that Kyle Whittingham has ever done. And they seem to just incrementally just keep getting better and better every year. And, you know, as they're starting to find success with winning the Pac-12 South last year, you know, we expect that trend to continue moving on into the 2020 class.
Moving on to another kind of changes in the offseason, Troy Taylor, who'd been the offensive coordinator for, I think, 2 full years. Is that right? Am I reading this correctly?
Seasons. You were reading that correctly. Wow. Seasons.
Okay. So, I mean, losing, like, that's a lot of continuity for Utah at the offensive coordinator spot. He moved on to Sac State. And in his stead, it looks like Andy Ludwig, formerly of Vanderbilt, the OC there, and then it was the OC at Wisconsin, San Diego State, Cal, Utah once before. I mean, he's been around, been an OC for basically forever. I mean, 97, it looks like, was his first year as an offensive coordinator, and he's been an offensive coordinator at various stops since then. Walk us through what that change was all about. Was that just Taylor finding a good opportunity? Was it mutual? Was it anything like that? And what does Andy Ludwig bring to the table?
Yeah, so Troy Taylor actually got hired on as the head coach at Sacramento State, so it was a move up to a head coaching gig. He's also from the Sacramento area, so it was a chance to go home. The contract that he got was guaranteed for several years. It was pretty unheard of for an FCS-style contract that he got. So it was pretty much a no-brainer for him to take that job. So when Utah went out and looked for a new offensive coordinator, of course, they were able to land Andy Ludwig. I think it was a really good hire. Andy has, of course, worked for Kyle Whittingham before. As you know, Whittingham tends to burn through offensive coordinators. Kyle's not the easiest coach to work for. He's very demanding. He has a very high standard, and he will hold you to that in no uncertain terms. And so Andy Ludwig, he knows exactly what he's getting into. And really, I think that he brings to the table some things that will fit in really well with Utah. He is far and away Whittingham's most successful offensive coordinator from a numbers standpoint. He was, of course, the coordinator when they went to the Sugar Bowl in 08 and went undefeated, finished number 2 in the nation in the polls. And he's a guy that, you know, he did well at Vanderbilt. I think that he outpunched his weight in terms of the talent and the defenses that he was going against. And he's also a guy that had a lot of success at Wisconsin running the football, which is something that Whittingham wants to do. So, you know, when you look at this Utah team this year with a Zach Moss coming back, he didn't enter for the NFL. He's coming back. He's got a chance to be the number one back statistically in the history of the program. And, you know, I have a feeling that it's going to be a lot more like the Wisconsin Andy Ludwig than maybe some of the other stops that he's had along the way. But I think that it's a good fit. He's going to have some key veterans in really key positions, and if they can get that offensive line shored up, it should be a pretty potent Utah offensive attack this year.
Dad, you mentioned the offensive line. A couple of big losses, especially on the left side of the line. How is Utah going to reload the offensive line this spring? What have they looked like so far?
Yeah, they lose, of course, 2 first team all Pac-12 linemen from last year, left tackle Jackson Barton, right guard Jordan Angasiva. And then, of course, Lo Falamaka was a starter when he wasn't hurt, but he was an honorable mention all conference selection the last couple of years. So they lost 3 really talented, really experienced offensive linemen. That's the biggest thing they're trying to figure out this spring. They've taken starting right tackle Darren Paulo, who started at right tackle the last two seasons. They flipped him over to left tackle. There's a good chance that he stays there. He's certainly going to be there all spring. We'll see what happens throughout the summer and the fall. But so, you know, he's a returning starter. They'll have him on the left side. Orlando Umana, who finished the year last year as Utah's starting center, he'll return there. They've got Nick Ford, who started two or three games last year. He'll probably play right tackle for the Utes. And then they're looking for somebody to step up and really fill that hole. There's not a lot of experience on the squad right now in terms of guys, snaps played in real games, which is a concern. There's some JUCO guys that are coming in the offseason. Bama Lassini, who I mentioned before, JUCO All-American guy. He's a 6'8" tackle. There's a chance that they put him at right tackle and bump Ford inside. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Utes were able to go out and get one or maybe even two graduate transfers on the offensive line. I know that they've had a couple of guys in for visits. They've got a couple more scheduled. And I'd be shocked if we didn't see that. Somebody, you know, coming in that's got game experience that could step in and potentially start right away. If they're able to do that, they should be fine. It's going to take a few weeks in the fall camp to get some cohesiveness along that line, and as you guys know, especially if you're a run-centric team, it's really important for that line to be able to gel to accomplish what you want, and that will be the number one order of business. But really, you know, even when you look at what's going on in spring this year, there's going to be a big incomplete because there's going to be so many bodies that are coming in the summertime and in the fall that we just don't know what they're going to look like this fall. But that's by far and away the biggest question mark that we're seeing on the Utah offense right now.
The man behind that offensive line, Tyler Huntley, he's had some issues staying healthy the last couple of years. I think he ended up playing, I think, in 9 games last year, and it was like 9 or 10 the previous year. How have you seen any, or have you heard anything about any kind of leap he's taken this offseason? Is he ready for that kind of big, that big third year as the starter? Is there any push from like a Jason Shelley, who actually closed out the year pretty strong, to, I don't know, give him a little bit of competition this spring? What's your sense of that and how Huntley especially is adapting to Ludwig's offense?
Yeah, really, from what we've seen so far this spring, this is Tyler Huntley's team. You know, he's a senior. He's got some aspirations that he wants to play at the next level. He knows that the pressure's on. He's got to show that he can stay healthy, that he can direct the offense. And this is going to be a Utah team that's going to have a lot of buzz behind them in terms of, you know, potentially winning the South for the second straight year, maybe even contending for a Pac-12 title. And he's the guy that's really got to take this team on his shoulders if that's going to happen. And he knows that. And so he's played well so far this spring. It's been a really workmanlike spring for him so far. You know, he's getting in, trying to learn the offense. I think the good sign for Utah fans is that he's noticeably bigger than he was a season ago. He's put on at least 10 pounds of muscle, which is something that he needed to do. He's always been on the thin side. You know, he's still got his speed. He's still able to create and evade pass rushers. But, you know, he's also got that lively arm. You know, when he got hurt last year against Arizona State, it was kind of a freak thing. He broke his collarbone on a pass rush. He was just trying to run away from the pass rush. They tackled him from behind and he landed wrong on that shoulder. You know, just not something that you can really prepare for. But, you know, so it was bad luck. But he'd been playing really well. He had a 4 or 5 game stretch where he had really come into his own. He was executing the offense. He was doing well. So when he went down, you know, he'd been playing some of the best football that we've seen him play in a Utah uniform. And so the coaches are hopeful that he's going to be able to step up his leadership abilities and continue doing so and hopefully stay a little bit more healthy just because he's put on some added weight.
Hey, Dan, on the defensive side of the ball, some big losses at linebacker and at safety. Chase Hansen, probably the headliner of that group. But how's Utah going to replace some of the guys missing from the roster? Because in that back seven, it just seems like some really experienced and high production players are not going to be there anymore.
Yeah, they lost four starters from that back seven, which under most circumstances, you know, I'd be concerned if I were a Utah fan about that. But there are so many pieces in this defense, and it was a very good Utah defense last year, and they're coming back. You know, Utah's probably got the best defensive line in the Pac-12 right now. They've got a defensive tackle rotation that runs four, maybe five deep, including Leki Fotu, his first team all Pac-12. John Penisini, I think, was all honorable mention last year. They've got the Pac-12 sack leader from the last 2 years and Bradley Anae coming back. They've shored up things on the opposite side of Anae with Mika Tafu. He's had a really good spring. And so that defensive line should be as stout as it ever was. Obviously losing out on Chase Hansen and Cody Barton, who really I think was the unsung hero of that Utah defense last year. He was so good for a majority of the season. That's going to be a big question mark. They've of course got Manny Bowen, the transfer from Penn State, to step in. They think that he's going to be able to step in and start. He's looked really good in the spring so far. You know, he's got explosiveness. He's got the athleticism that you want. It's about him learning the defense. And really, you know, he had some problems at Penn State from a disciplinary standpoint, and he knows that he's got a year to keep his nose clean under Kyle Whittingham. And he's really using this year as an audition for the NFL. He's got the physical characteristics to be an NFL linebacker. He needs to show he can do it from a mental and a character standpoint. So this is an opportunity for him. On the other side of him, because Utah generally runs that nickel defense, you typically only see two linebackers in at once. Francis Bernard, he was a part-time starter last year. He stepped in for Chase Hansen at the end of the year when Hansen got hurt. He's out for this spring, so we haven't seen him this spring, but he'll be back in the fall after shoulder surgery. He should be pretty good as well. He'll be a senior. He knows the defense. So we think the linebackers are going to be okay. They're not quite as deep as they've been. And so if somebody gets hurt or goes down, that could be problematic. The cornerbacks are going to be as good as ever. Jalen Johnson is arguably the best cornerback in the Pac-12. And, you know, he was a lockdown guy last year. He's going to be, you know, he's looked amazingly well this year in spring. He's a guy that is gunning for an early entry in the NFL draft. So he's hoping that this year, his junior year, will be his last at Utah. And he wants to use a big year to springboard him there. And then at safety, they've actually had Julian Blackman, who played cornerback last year, was second team all Pac-12. He's going to start at free safety. He's been fantastic all spring. I think it's going to be a seamless transition. And then they've got, you know, they've got some other guys that are stepping up that have been in the program. So a little bit of an experience, but I think in the back end, in the secondary, they should be pretty good. It's just about keeping those linebackers healthy. And that's going to be the key for this Utah defense. But there are enough pieces in this defense that it should be another really good unit for the Utes again this year.
So when I was looking last year, and Ryan will actually never let me forget this. when I was looking at the schedule for Utah last year, it was just even expecting that Utah would be its typically good team, I didn't see a whole lot of chance they were going to compete and win the South. I think I picked them fifth. Is that right, Ryan?
You certainly did.
I picked them fifth in a tie with right. Two other teams, but fifth nonetheless. I don't see anything like that this year. They change out Oregon for Oregon State. They change out Stanford for Cal, which I think questionable. I mean, Cal might be a little bit better this year, but probably two beneficial things. And the non-conference slate has Northern Illinois coming to Utah instead of Utah traveling to Northern Illinois. Idaho State at home, BYU on the road, but Utah's been kind of habitually beaten up on BYU of late. What's the feeling around the program about this schedule? Because looking at it, it seems like it's setting up pretty well for a Utah repeat at the very least in the South. But this could also, I mean, set up for maybe one of the better Utah seasons in quite a long time.
Yeah, when you talk to the Utah coaching staff, they're extremely optimistic about their expectations in terms of what they think they can be. Of course, there's some work that needs to be done. That offensive line, like I said, is a huge concern. They've got to get that figured out if they want to accomplish their objectives. But, you know, like you said, you know, swapping out Oregon for Oregon State, swapping out Stanford for Cal is going to be helpful on the schedule. They've got to play Washington and they got to play them on the road, but that looks like that's the toughest matchup against any of the North teams. They've still got Washington State, but, you know, with no Minshew, you know, we don't know what Washington State's going to look like either. So there's going to be some question marks around them. They've got, and when you look at the roster, a senior quarterback, a senior running back that has a chance to break every rushing record at Utah, a good senior laden defense, the pieces are in place. They've got to stay healthy. They've got to do better at not turning the ball over than they did a season ago. And they've got to do better at forcing turnovers than they did a season ago. But if they're able to do that, this could be a really special year for Utah football. But, you know, when I say that, you know, keep in mind, yeah, there's I use the word if a lot. And so, you know, I think there's cautious optimism, especially in the fan base. But it's a team that the pieces are there. They just need to figure out how to do it and how to take that next step from what they did a season ago.
The Utah special teams, usually, you know, one of the best, if not the best, in the conference. What's up with the kicking game for the spring and what you expect for the 2019 season? Any turnover? What's going on there?
Yeah, so I mean, Utah had the best battery and maybe college football history last year. You know, they had the Ray Guy winner and Mitch Wisnowski, and then of course the Groza winner and Matt Gay on the same team, which is something that hadn't been done before. Both of them graduated. Both of them are going to get their shot at the NFL. We'll see. You know, it's tricky with specialists and getting those jobs in the NFL. So we'll see what happens to them. But in terms of backfilling at punter, Utah once again went to Australia. They got a guy named Ben Lennon. He's a former professional rugby player. He's a little bit older guy, but he's a former professional athlete. He's another big guy like Wisnowski was, you know, 6'2", 6'3", like 220, got a booming leg. He looks like he could be every bit as good as Wisnowski was. Of course, most of the time we've seen him kick so far this spring, it's been in helmet and shorts, so we don't know what he's going to look like, you know, when the lights are on and when, you know, he's got people, you know, running after him, trying to kill him. But so far so good in terms of the punt game, and Utah just has a knack of being able to find these guys. You know, both the last two punters they've had have both won Ray Guy awards. So I think that they've got a pretty good track record in being able to find these guys. Place kicker is a much bigger concern. Chaden Johnston, he's a junior, is slated to take over for Matt Gay. He's had kind of a rough spring. He's missed a lot of kicks this spring. And I think that they're going to bring in a couple of other guys to compete with him to see where or at least push him. You know, the last couple of years with Gay, he's been so good, and it's been almost an automatic thing. Anything from 55 yards in has been pretty confident. You know, Whittingham has been confident that they were going to get those points on the board. I don't see that happening this year. And so this offense is going to have to score touchdowns and not rely on field goals like they've done in the past. Unless Johnston can step up and show that he's got what it takes to take over from Gay. So place kicker is definitely a concern. Punter looks good so far, but overall, Utah's always pretty good at special teams. I think they'll figure it out. If they don't, you know, it'll be a surprise.
One of the other big notes from this offseason was Kyle Whittingham getting locked in for another, I think it's an extension that extends his contract by 3 years till 2023. You know, his name has been, I know, kicked around a little bit by various coaching searches. I know UCLA's, he was definitely on the kick around list before they landed on Chip Kelly. Do you think this locks him and Utah kind of together until, you know, do you see any scenario where he actually ends up leaving this program at any point?
It's pretty unlikely at this point. I think, you know, he's 60. I think, he's long said that he doesn't want to be like his college coach, Lavelle Edwards, who of course coached forever at BYU, well into his 70s, or at least it felt that way. But he says that he doesn't want to be like that he's going to want to retire before then. Of course, you know, he's a football junkie. And so we'll see whether he holds that up. But you know, he's got some family playing for the team. He's got a nephew that's on the defensive line that's going to be there for a few more years. So I would expect him to, you know, unless something really strange happens, I would expect him to be around for at least another 3 or 4 years until he graduates, and then we'll see. You know, he's made a lot of money in his years, and you know, he's starting to have grandkids, and he likes that role of grandpa maybe as much as he likes the role as coach. So, you know, we'll see how much of the bug he still has and how much energy he has. I think a lot of it's going to have to do with, you know, just how the team does over the next couple of years as well. But I think he's a Ute for the long haul. Eventually, they're probably, you know, he's got a couple of years before he's going to break the all-time wins record at Utah. And eventually they're going to build a statue of him out in front of the stadium. That's at least what I think.
Dan, last thing for me, you know, as Dave mentioned, he picked Utah to finish fifth last year. I don't know if you know, I picked Utah to win the South, and they've never done it before. So, you know, I'm pretty good at the media day predictions for whatever reason. But did that change the mentality at all? Because it was just one of those things where, you know, Colorado had won it a couple of years ago. Utah's always been close, finishing second a lot, but never getting over the top. Now that they've actually won the South, has it changed like kind of the mentality, I guess, around the program, knowing, hey, we can do this now. Next goal is win the whole thing.
You know, I think it has. And especially because of the way that they did it. You know, Tyler Huntley went down with, what, 3 games to play? And they had Oregon the next week at home. And it was no sure thing that they were going to be able to close it out. They had to go undefeated through the rest of the conference schedule. Jason Shelley stepped in after, you know, not playing hardly at all his entire career, stepped in. And of course, they lost Zach Moss at the same time. So, you know, they had backups at quarterback, backups at running back. Their best wide receiver was really banged up, and they still got it done. And I think that, you know, just the fact that they were able to do it, they were able to have that next man up mentality, which is kind of the mantra of the program when people get hurt, that they were able to finally get over that hump after they'd been so close for so long. You know, I think it did kind of change the mentality, and you've seen it a little bit this spring where they know that nothing's given to them. They know that they're going to have to fight and claw their way for every single thing that they're going to get. And they also know that there's a lot of, you know, rising programs, especially in the South. You know, Arizona State, they're not going to go away. UCLA is up and coming. They're not going to go away. You know, one would think that USC is going to be, you know, mad as hell, and they're going to come back and try to do something. And so, you know, Utah can't take for granted that, you know, even if people think that they're the favorites, they can't take for granted that they're going to go out and get it. So it's been very businesslike, very workmanlike all spring long. And you know, the entire theme, you know, anytime you talk to anybody in the program, they've said, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. You know, we want to win the Pac-12, and you know, we haven't done it yet, and we've got to go to work if we want to accomplish that. So, but I do think that there's a confidence we haven't seen before, and it's going to be interesting to see if they're able to pull it off.
Well, very cool. Good stuff from Dan. I'm done. Ryan, you got anything else?
No, that's good. We, you know, curious to see what the Utes end up doing. Always a well-coached team. You know, you get some really good line play. If they get the offense flowing and maybe keep some guys healthy, who knows? It could be the breakthrough team. Everyone's talking about the North, but the Utah's that team that looks like they could be that next one in the South. So we'll see how they do.
All right. Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. You can follow Dan at D Sorensen on Twitter. Thanks.
All right. Well, that was great stuff from Dan. Got to talk some Utah football. Before we jump into some other topics and the questions, I want to tell you guys about Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokers charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 most popular with Robinhood. You can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, Track your favorite companies and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right amount. You never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners here at the Podcast of Champions a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at champions.robinhood.com. That's champions.robinhood.com.
Brilliant read, Ryan.
Hey,
brilliant.
Better than last week, I think. That I was a little, I think it was a little under the weather last week. But we're doing all right now. There's been some news though, David, in the Pac-12 space. A lot of it having to do with.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right? Like,
I still got to edit that or laughing. But I guess our buddy John Wilner kind of started this off, and he addressed this, I think it was in his newsletter, that Larry Scott and company, they're seeking a $750 million cash infusion through the plan to sell an equity stake in the conference media rights. What did you think about all that when that was coming down? Because we had heard 10% for $50 million. Now we're hearing they want $750 million, but it's an unknown stake. Be 25 years and things like that. I'm curious to see what you thought about all that, Dave.
I mean, I think it's the same crazy thing that we were talking about last time. I mean, I don't think it solves anything long term. I think it's a short term thing that gives him something that he can claim as a win, but I just don't see how it meaningfully changes anything. You know, talking to Wilner about it a while back, it really doesn't change the whole dynamics of the league or what the future of the league is. I mean, it's basically the same deal it's been. So the number changes by $250 million, but I don't know that substantively changes, especially over the lifetime of whatever it was, 25 years. I don't know how much that is actually going to change really anything with the reality of the league right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It just seems like you're touting, you know, 100% ownership, and it just seems like they're putting so much into someone's going to spend a whole lot of money on this network when the media rights come up, and I just don't see how you're going to make any kind of return on that $750 million 25-year commitment, and what kind of stake you'd have to give up in the conference. And you know, that just is, it's kind of a band-aid where you make up some of the money that the shortfall between other conferences in this one, but now you don't even own your whole, you know, the whole network anymore, which was one of the big things that they were touting.
Yeah, it just seems like it's very, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like it's very much going against the entire point of what they were trying to do from the beginning. And for not enough gain. You know, it's one thing if you're giving up ownership to have a long-standing agreement with some TV network that's going to finally get you something on par with the other leagues. But if you're just giving up ownership for a cash infusion, it just doesn't seem like that's it doesn't seem like that's keeping at all with the strategy they've been going for. I think at any point where they get some major cash infusion like that, and if it does happen, that should be the same day that Larry Scott is fired as the commissioner, because that's an indictment of his entire strategy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you can point to this and say it was ever part of the grand strategy for him with a vision he sold the university presidents on. So if that doesn't work out, okay, well, you're out, and this can be part of a new pivot. Get the cash infusion to then do something else and figure out some other avenue. But I don't think you let him stay in charge if this is the desperate measure they're forced to.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the Pac-12 fans would agree with you, Dave. And then the other story, and this was so first reported by the Sports Business Journal. It's behind a paywall, so I didn't really get to read the whole thing. Awful Announcing actually had a kind of a blip on this too. But basically what they were reporting was that the Pac-12 and Larry Scott, they turned down an offer from ESPN to distribute their networks in exchange for an extension of their rights agreement that would have given ESPN the Pac-12 rights. And the Awful Announcing story says well into the 2030s. So it would have been significant. So what they're saying was it looked like a lifeline to bail out the Pac-12 because the network is struggling. But the Pac-12 is again betting on itself, hoping that when the next round of, you know, rights deals comes up, you know, within the next 5 years, there's going to be some sort of bidding war on the Pac-12. So they said the Pac-12 is getting $3 billion over 12 years from ESPN and Fox. So it's definitely one of the bigger revenue generators. Extending ESPN, it would have removed a lot of the uncertainty around the Pac-12 networks in their distribution. But like we said, Larry Scott, they're kind of betting on their own, you know, their own hand again, as opposed to letting someone else that does this and does it well and frankly much more efficiently handle it. So I don't know what you thought about that when that broke too, Dave.
I mean, it depends on the exact particulars, which I don't think were fully pushed out. I mean, if it was a bad deal, it's a bad deal. And I don't think you take just anything at this point, though, like, you do take like most things at this point, but maybe not any deal that's proposed. But again, it's the same deal as the $750 million. This represents a major pivot from the strategy he's sold everyone on.
Yeah.
So if they take this deal, also, he should be fired immediately. And that doesn't mean that this is necessarily a bad thing to take. It just it's the opposite of what his vision was. So I would obviously prefer it. I don't think anybody is loving the Pac-12 Network's current distribution model from a consuming standpoint. But if the dollars and cents didn't really make sense, I mean, you can't knock it until you see what was like the actual proposal, because we know the date and time, but do we know the money that was offered? I don't think that was in the story, or at least not the synopsis and awful announcing.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that in the synopsis there either. I mean, they summarized that it probably, if you could, you know, sell your own rights 5 years from now and there's a bidding war, you probably would leave some money on the table. But if you sign with ESPN, you're going to be on DirecTV. Distribution is going to instantly be better. So there was some sort of a trade-off there, you know. And Larry Scott and Pac-12 right now are not going to gamble on that.
No, and you know, I think maybe it sounds like they might be prioritizing the cash infusion because it gives them, I don't know, maybe in the eyes of some people that can be in keeping with their strategy. But I think either one represents a pivot away from what they've been trying to do, which is maintain basically sole ownership until the next major rights agreement, correct? I mean, that's the gist that we've gotten from everyone we've talked to. So neither of these seem in keeping with the strategy. So I think if either of them go forward, that the conclusion should be that Larry Scott needs to go. And actually at this point, Larry Scott just needs to go. If these things are even being talked about as potential strategies for them, because they are in such desperate straits at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think it's funny if you follow John Wilner? He talks a little bit about the money that the units that you get for the, this is basketball, sorry, you know, the NCAA tournament, and you're getting this much money down the road. So having Oregon make it to the Sweet 16 actually makes all the schools a little bit more money. But then you look at what the other conferences are making, the Pac-12 is still behind, but it's better than last year, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, not too bad. So I don't know, maybe that's something that Larry Scott can hang his hat on, like, hey, we didn't stink as badly in the tournament this year as we did prior years.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all a crapshoot, but yeah, why not? Point to that. What the hell? Use some of that weird recency bias, small sample size stuff in your favor. Why not?
Nice. Any other Pac-12 topics we need to discuss, David, before we...
No, Ryan, I want to talk about sex. You want to talk about sex?
Let's talk about sex. All right.
Guys, let's talk about sex. Good sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color blue, Chew.com. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. You know, Ryan, when I tried Blue Chew, I really noticed something extra. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. Certainly not in this ad read. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code CHAMPS. That's C-H-A-M-P-S. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's B-L-U-E, Chew, C-H-E-W.com, promo code CHAMPS to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
We certainly do, and that's a wonderful read by you, Dave, a new sponsor for the podcast, Blue Chew. Great job there.
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate you.
We're talking about good sex here on the podcast. So people didn't want us to talk about fancy Disney princesses. So we're shifting gears this podcast.
we are shifting. We are aging up the podcast.
Nice. Well, should we jump into our mailbag? Lots of questions.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should jump into that right now.
So we have, this is from Nicholas. Man, this is pretty long. It is Pac-12 roster strength question. This looks like a blog post to me, but I'll give it a shot. Hey, right. I mean, it does look like it would be like one of Andrew's like series of 16 tweets. Like this would probably be about 20 tweets he's got worth in there. He said, please excuse the long and rambling email, but I wanted to respond to your question you answered during the last Washington episode related to belief to the belief that USC has the most talent in the Pac-12 or whether Washington has surpassed the Trojans. For some quick background on me, my name is Nicholas Ian Allen. I am an Athlon sports contributor and a former assistant high school football coach in Georgia. I'm also the managing editor of an independent college football analytics outlet called CFB Winning Edge. I've heard of those guys. I'm a relatively new listener. Well, thanks for being one. And he says, I've been listening on a semi-regular basis late in the 2018 season in my attempt to overcome my East Coast bias. I am an Atlanta native currently living in New Hampshire. Wow. He's all over the place. Dave's in Atlanta. But I've been a 24/7 sports subscriber for years, and I love the show and appreciate the level of detail you offer, even when things stray off topic, which is very often. And he didn't say that. That's me. In answering the, quote, most talented question, Ryan, you mentioned the 24/7 talent composite, which is a great tool, but it isn't yet available for the 2019 season. I started CFB Winning Edge last year, and as part of my updates for the upcoming season, I kept a running tally on each team's average 24/7 sports composite rankings, as well as a more in-depth tool I call roster strength. I don't want to go too heavy into the boring details, but do want to explain a little how these numbers were developed. To determine each team's roster strength rating, I take 24/7 talent projection for each player and adjust it for experience and add points for on-field production. Holy cow, this is in-depth. Then I weight each position/unit, quarterback, running back, offensive line, etc., so that projected starters count most, followed by two deep players, and finally others listed on the roster with walk-ons that have not played excluded from the mix.
Our man Andrew just listened to you read that paragraph, and he feels like he just chewed up some Blue Chew.
Maybe these guys are related. Do you think Andrew and Nicholas?
Yeah, maybe. They're both really excited about the numbers here.
Actually, it says Nicholas, but the email says Andrew at Washington. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Okay, so according to my numbers, here are the current 24/7 sports composite averages for each Pac-12 school, as well as the current college football winning edge roster strength ratings. These figures include transfers and other roster moves as of March 18th. Wow, so he's up to date. Okay, so most talented, this is by the average 24 sports composite. It's still USC, 0.8947. Close behind is Washington, then Oregon, Stanford, ASU, UCLA, Colorado, Utah, Cal, Washington State, Arizona, and then Oregon State. So there's 0.07 or so, 0.065 between number 1 and number 12. So that's kind of the range. It's 0.0895 to 0.82. So the ones up the top are pretty close. I guess from 6 to 7, there's a bigger drop. UCLA 6, 0.855, and then Colorado 7, 0.835. So there's a kind of a drop between the top half and the second half. Hopefully, Nicholas, I'm describing that correctly.
It really translated well, I think, from the written word to your description of it verbally. I think it was great.
I'm trying, you know. There's a lot.
I know it was beautiful. It was beautiful. I don't think anyone glazed over at all.
And it's not like I read this and studied it before. I'm just kind of doing this on the fly.
Okay, no, it's great.
Strongest roster. So this is strongest roster according to CFB Winning Edge team strength ratings. They still have USC. So 88.89, right behind it, Oregon. Wow, Washington's fourth. Oregon, 88.76. Then Utah in the 87s. Washington, 87s. Stanford, 86. Arizona State, 86. Colorado, 85. UCLA, 85. Arizona, 84. Oregon State is 10th, 83. Washington State is 11th, 82.9, close to 83. And then Cal is last at 82.44. So that's a little bit different. He said, I won't claim roster strength is a perfect metric by any means, but I am confident it gives good insight into which areas of a particular team are the most and least talented, experienced, and productive. Nevertheless, I was highly surprised Washington ranked number 4 in roster strength. If I were to make this list based on opinion, I'd probably put Washington as a close number 2 to USC. But even though Washington sits 4th, it's important to note the difference between the Huskies and Utah, who is surprisingly high, highly ranked, given the most modest recruiting average, is a razor-thin 0.7-point margin, and we should view the two as a virtual tie. When diving deeper, Washington has a couple of question marks on defense. Specifically, the Washington defensive line weighted unit ranking is 2.19 points below the Pac-12 average and just 0.73 points above the FBS average. The linebacker core, though experienced, is roughly league average. The secondary includes at least two all-conference level players, but lacks both experience beyond those two and overall depth. Again, it's not perfect, but roster strength attempts to remove opinion out of the equation as much as possible. Based on the recruiting rankings and when adjusting for experience and production, Washington hasn't caught up to USC just yet. Woo! You might read that one more time. Are we good?
Yeah. Do you want to see if we can do it right this time? I think once for all the marbles.
Was that not
you did? You did amazing work. Okay. Amazing.
I was like, I didn't think it was that bad.
I have no additional commentary. That was great stuff, Nicholas. Really, really good stuff. He also sent us a link to the profiles themselves, which we're going to check out. But I will definitely look deeper into this. And I'm sure our friend Andrew will seek you out on Twitter and send you a bunch of eye charts of his own for you to look at.
Andrew, definitely start tweeting some of those at Nicholas. I think he wants to be tweeted.
Nicholas, I think, is your target audience here.
Yeah.
But really good stuff. Love that. And so it disproves my theory then that Washington has caught up. But they are close.
I don't know. I think it's close, but there's, we'll see. Just those metrics and stuff. And I think we'll know more when some of the guys get to campus in the fall and we, get a look at these teams and we'll see how they do.
Yeah. All right. And now we're on to a text message. This is Go UCLA 05 again. Just got around to listening to the UCLA and USC preview episode. If you two were still wondering about self-flagellation, in light of the Blue Chew ad read, I don't think anybody's still wondering about self-flagellation. But he says, if you two were still wondering about self-flagellation, go watch The Da Vinci Code, the scene where the albino monk played by Paul Bettany, he spells it Bethany, but it's Bettany, whips himself. This is self-flagellation. Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Yeah, well, that's a thing that happens.
Okay. Should we go to conference expansion?
Yeah, please. Let's do.
This is Bob. Hi, y'all. This is Bob from Anchorage. I didn't know they did y'all in Anchorage. That's pretty cool.
They can do y'all wherever they want.
You can. And it's, maybe Bob was from the South or...
Yeah, you don't know.
Dated someone from the South and you get, married someone from the South. Who knows? I did. I don't say y'all, but I did marry someone from the South.
I live in the South and I don't say y'all.
That's true.
People look at me funny when I say you guys and when I put articles in front of freeways. That's what I do.
So I was having a discussion with some coworkers and I was wondering which conference is most likely to expand in the future. And if so, who will they aim for? Also, since this is a podcast about the Pac-12, I was wondering who Larry Scott has scouted as potential raid targets whenever conference expansion begins again. Sincerely, Bob. P.S. Keep up the great work. I always look forward to listening to this podcast on Tuesdays. Well, thank you, Bob.
Okay, so which conferences are most likely to expand? I would say the ones that have the densest, top schools that could. I mean, the ones that make the most sense are ones that are located in the South and in the Southwest, like Texas area, like Houston getting into the Big 12 or the SEC or something like that at some point makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
The thing is, I don't know if there's as many logical options out West for like a Pac-12 school. Like, I think if the Pac-12 is going to do it, it's going to have to either really drop down and not prioritize a lot of the stuff it's prioritized with expansions in the past, like being a major research university, having, you know, all of the Olympic sports in addition to the major revenue sports. It might have to drop that if it's trying to expand locally, and if not, it's going to have to expand its geographic footprint quite a bit if it wants to expand, because it'll either require poaching members of the Big 12 at some point, and even that's going to require an expansion, geographic expansion, or, you know, grabbing like a Houston or something like that. But either way, that would be a big change for the Pac-12. I don't know else who's likely. What other conferences do you think are likely at this point? I mean, I think the Big 12 could add Houston tomorrow with no real adjustment to what they're doing. But I don't know who else would be likely to add somebody right now.
Yeah, I think Houston and the Big 12 could happen. I think the Big 12 has some chances to do that. I'm not seeing a lot of like poaching and stuff going on unless it's sort of like a sinking ship. So like if one of the conferences starts to go under, or it's a big, which I don't see happening, or it's one of those, let's make 16 super conferences and sort of like divvy up the Big 12 or something and do it that way, where it's like a big deal. Like, we're going to take 64 teams. We're going to break away from the NCAA and have our own football conference or something. Like, something big like that, I think you could see. But right now, I don't think, you know, Larry Scott's, first of all, I think he's trying to save his own bacon. I don't think he's looking to expand right now. I don't think he's trying to complicate things. And I don't feel it's going to be something like, well, look at BYU or Fresno State or San Diego State. I just don't think that's in the cards. It's not going to help. They need to make money. And I don't think adding anyone like that outside of, unless it was like Texas, Oklahoma, I don't think you're going to be making any more money. So I don't see the Pac-12 really looking at it, Bob. And I really don't see it this changing much on a national level, unless it's like that big next step where you're going for the 4-16 super conferences or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right.
It's just my guess.
All right.
Yeah.
You ready for Chris from Seoul?
Yeah.
All right. Get serious about improving Pac-12 football. This year's off-season podcasts have been great, but for the princesses thing. Well, we can't help it.
Those are your questions, guys. Like, you're asking.
We're just your instruments. You can play us however you want. The previews are a good listen, and the Pixar movie email was 5 stars. Plus, frequent listeners always enjoy a submission from Hitler Day, as well. My question: if the Pac-12 were to quit whining, vainly hoping for the demise of Larry Scott, and get serious about improving the football product, getting great head coaches throughout the conference would be a big help. Using UCLA's swing for the fences with Chip Kelly as a guidepost, which Pac-12 teams need to upgrade at head coach?
Ooh.
Oh boy. Okay. Let me just pull up.
Should we
Pac-12 football coaches right now, just so we don't forget anybody. All right, David Shaw, does Stanford need to upgrade? I'd say no.
No.
Kyle Whittingham, I'd say no.
No.
Chip Kelly.
No, that was the example he gave.
Yeah, I know. I was being funny. Oh. Justin Wilcox.
I mean, I don't think so. I think you give him a chance. I think, you know, it was a risk when you hire him, but he brought in experienced staff. I don't think you just instantly upgrade him right now, that they played really well on defense. But, you know, maybe next time through, you want to hire someone that's had experience before. But I think it's worked out okay so far.
All right. Herm Edwards.
See, that's, you just did this, and this is what you thought of, you know. He's performed better than anyone really expected him to. So I don't think you want to. I don't think you'd want to go in there and replace Herm Edwards today either.
Kevin Sumlin,
again, Texas A&M coach. You know, like, you just hired a guy from Texas A&M. So at Arizona, like, are you going to get someone better than that. That seems like a pretty good hire to me. I mean, we'll see how it works out, but I think on paper, I don't think you're looking for something better than that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with all of your assessments there. All right, so Mike Leach? Nope.
No.
I mean, maybe he'll end up being the best coach they've ever had. Chris Peterson? Probably not. I think he's pretty good.
He seems okay.
Mario Cristobal?
Okay, so I think under the circumstances where you went out and you got a guy that left after a year, I think it was a pretty good, you know, replacement hire. And it, you know, what you're seeing down at Florida State, maybe you're actually got the better of the two coaches. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But because that just happened, Dave, I don't think you'd go out there and say, we've got to replace Cristobal. I mean, a lot of people, they're the up and coming team this year. We'll see if they can live up to the hype, but yeah,
I would say in an ideal world, yeah, you'd have an upgrade there. I think Cristobal is obviously a great recruiting head coach, but I think Oregon has upped its profile. And probably with the money they're able to offer with all the Nike crap going on, you would think that they could get somebody who's in that, I don't know, clear tier one, tier two standpoint. And Cristobal is, I mean, he was prior to this, he had one kind of not great run at FIU, and that's pretty much all to his record. So he's still uncertain. Maybe he turns out really, really good there. I don't know. He's certainly recruiting very well, but I think you could upgrade that. Yeah.
I think that's fair. And I guess you could make the same argument for Justin Wilcox. I'm sort of like in the situation they are right now. Would I rather see them kind of play it out the next couple of years, or in an ideal world? Yeah. If you could get a Chip Kelly or something, bring him in right now, or someone like that at Cal or Oregon, probably should, you know, I guess, but I kind of don't mind the situation they're in. I guess that's the way I was looking at it.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. And then Jonathan Smith.
I mean, he's a Beaver.
Yeah. Upgrade him. Just do it.
You could upgrade him, but like, what, like, can you bring in someone better?
Do the damn thing we were talking about all last offseason. Don't bring in some guy who's going to run some like pro style offense. Somebody who's going to do something unique. Do the same thing you were supposed to do last offseason. Just do it now.
That's fair. Okay. I like it.
And then Clayton Helton.
Yes.
Is that even his name?
I don't think so. I think it's just Clay. It's like something Clay Helton. I should probably know this, but I don't.
I'm going to Google it because we should really know the man's name if we're calling for his firing. Charles. Oh, yeah, that's right. He's a Charles and so's Chip.
Yeah. They're both.
Yeah.
Yes. USC should have upgraded that last year. So yes.
Several times over the last 4 years.
He should have been hired to begin with, and he did some good things. You know, won a Rose Bowl, won the Pac-12, but that's the resume he had didn't match the kind of program he was taking over. So that completely makes sense.
And Mel Tucker hasn't done anything yet, so I'm not going
to
say.
It's really hard to say. Yeah, you know, like I
probably
I like,
not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
I think that's everybody.
That's all we got from Chris and Soul.
Oh, sorry. Also, your thoughts on who the home run hire? Oh, God. We should have done this while we were doing it.
Yeah.
This is why we should read all of the email before we start answering the question. But sometimes it doesn't work out for us.
Right.
All right. Anyway. Also, your thoughts on who the home run hire should be for each school that needs an upgrade. Okay. So that's only like three total schools.
Yeah.
Assume the schools go all out and tap donors hard to scrape up the coins. All right. So USC, who's the home run hire? Urban?
Urban Meyer. You got to go there.
Okay. Oregon, who's the dream hire?
Ooh, let's see.
Who makes the most sense? Who's like the best like up and coming coach?
Chip Kelly. Get him back.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. Like, who are best college who are we thinking of? All right, so what teams have been good who are not like obviously, they're not going to pull like a Saban, a Meyer, a right. Swinney.
Like Jeff Brom or someone? I think that'd be...
I think like a Jeff Brom, right?
You like that?
I think that's like the... I think that's maybe the speed there.
Okay.
And you take a flyer on guys like, I don't know, Malzahn, right? Because
yeah.
He's like perpetually having trouble with Auburn fans being psychotic. I think you would kind of swing for those types of fences. I think Brom would be a really, really good pick. And he's a guy who I think
you know, he already turned down Louisville, which was his perceived dream job. So if you can get him and get him in that conference, I don't think he's going to be jumping for anything in the foreseeable future. So yeah, let's go Jeff Brohm there.
Okay. Are we saying Cal upgrade or no?
You want to do upgrade for Cal?
Yeah. I mean, you could go like Jeff Tedford, right? He could come back. I mean, he's, right? No, I mean, like, I'm not joking.
No, I mean,
like,
yeah, you could. You could. See if he wants another go round. Yeah, why not? Hell yeah.
I don't know. But
let's get the Tedford effort. And then Oregon there? State is Ken Niumatalolo. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, Oregon, that's a problem with Oregon State. Like, it's tough because who's, you know, who can you realistically bring in there? So you were saying bring someone in that has a whole different kind of offense. Like, are you thinking like air raid, like Mike Leach sort of offense, or like
no. Triple option? Ken Niumatalolo, bring in a triple option guy.
Okay.
Yeah, do it.
That's realistic. All right. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Is that it?
All right. Yeah, that's it for Chris.
Nice. Thanks for that one. This one's from Bernie. For Dave. So he just has questions. For Dave, I read that Chip Kelly was very competitive. If so, do you think he is personally bothered when other schools out-recruit him?
I mean, I think all these guys are competitors, and I think they do, you know, depending on how much they prioritize it, I think they do take it, you know, a little bit. As an annoyance if they get out recruited for a guy, if they're honest enough to admit that. A lot of these guys have diluted senses of whether or not they're actually being out recruited or if it's something else that was going on. You know, the number of times, and this isn't a reference to Chip, this is actually a reference to many past coaches, the number of times I've heard, oh no, that school cheated to get him, or like from an assistant coach or from even a head coach, like, yeah, that's just sour grapes. They recruited harder than you did, and they did better things. And frankly, everyone's cheating, so stop saying stuff like that. And I think some coaches can be deluded and not necessarily think that they did a poor job recruiting. I think from a results standpoint, I think he has already made significant changes to their recruiting process. He changed out the entire recruiting staff. So I think at the end of the day, obviously the results weren't good enough for him. And so he made a lot of changes with that. So I think that speaks to, I mean, whether you want to call it a sense of competitiveness or a sense of, well, hell, if I'm going to be successful here, I'm going to need to recruit players, so we better get on this. whatever you want to call it, he's made those changes. So I don't care if anybody's personally bothered by anything. A lot of people get personally bothered by things and then still suck. It's more just, are you going to do a better job? Are you going to have a better process? And are you going to make a better strategy? And it looks right now, and this is, again, only a month and a half after the last signing day, only a month and a half really into this recruiting cycle, it seems they've made some positive changes. But we'll see if those carry forward for another 2 months, another 3 months, another 8 months. And then if UCLA is in a much better position come February next year.
All right. And then he said for Ryan, most coaches believe football games are won in the trenches. USC seems to be doing well in recruiting skill position players, but not so well with linemen. Why? I think that's been a concern of a lot of USC fans. That, you know, it's easier to recruit the skill players because that's what's around USC more. I think you have to find guys that can develop sometimes on the offensive line or defensive lines because they're not as many the highly rated prospects that are coming out of high school that look like they could be juniors in college, like you get in the SEC country and stuff. So I think that's part of it. And, you know, I think sometimes just the focus, they kind of focus on the shiny new things that they like, and you want to get the next Adoree Jackson or something, and you're not necessarily looking for the next Tyron Smith. You'd like them, but it's more fun to recruit those skill position guys. But that's just something the USC's done really well at. I agree with you, Bernie. I think they need to do a better job of that. It's hard to say why, but being the proximity, you know, you're in the low-hanging fruit around you is what they've recruited really well, and it's not necessarily been linemen that have been really easy to recruit, so that could be part of it too.
Yeah,
he said, in closing, is there any chance you can stop with the Disney references? I mean, really? So we did the Disney reference 2 weeks ago. We had a resurgence of a whole bunch more Disney references the following week, and this week we're the Disney pushback, Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's really interesting to see the different flows of conversation surrounding our Disney princess topic. I really think it's an interesting insight into our listener group. It seems to me, and this is just my impression, our more active listeners maybe are a little bit on the side of they like the Disney princess talk. Our less active, less likely to email in listeners, on the other hand, seem much more anti
right.
Disney princess talk.
But after 2 weeks of it, then it forced them to email back. It's like, oh, I better.
Right. It's just a bridge too far for them. They can't take it anymore.
Right. That makes sense. So, okay.
All right. Very interesting. This is from JJ in San Diego. Dave, Habit Burger? Really? How can any burger that includes mayonnaise as a base condiment be considered good? That is horrendous. But you are a Bruin, and the Bruins are the mayonnaise of the Pac-12. Pasty, soft, and stink when out in the sun too long. Ryan, I thought you would go for Wiener Schnitzel, since the Trojans are the sauerkraut of the Pac-12, rotting from inside out. Wow. That leads to my off-season question. If each Pac-12 team was a... Oh, God. If each Pac-12 team was a condiment, which condiment would they be? A couple of suggestions. Larry Scott. JJ, Larry Scott is not a Pac-12 team. This is not a suggestion that's actively going to be useful for us. Anyway, Larry Scott, anchovies. Nobody except a few stuffy elites like them. Everyone else despises them. Colorado, pickles. Leave them on the side and no one cares. Arizona State, jalapeno. Hot in the beginning, but gradually fades away. Utah, kale, tough and coarse, but generally unfulfilling. Arizona, chili, just a mess on everything.
Wow. We're probably going to need some suggestions for this, because I don't really feel like doing that. I don't know. Do you?
No, neither do I. I've got I have no juice for that right now.
I don't. Like condiments? I don't know why I was thinking about that. I think I had lunch over here at the pier. I like had a fish sandwich and some fries. And are you what is your hot dog? What do you put on your hot dog?
When I have my better judgment, I put nothing on it. Oh. But if I'm putting just like a basic hot dog together, I usually go with ketchup, chopped up onions, diced onions, and then some relish.
Okay. I don't like pickles, so I guess I was never a big relish guy. And I was always just like ketchup on a hot dog as a kid. And I feel like people like shame you into putting mustard on, which I like. And now I do mustard and ketchup, but I sort of felt like my grown up, like, you know, my childhood, I just like ketchup on there. I do like chili cheese dogs. So he says, I guess I would be an Arizona person, like put chili on stuff. But isn't it weird? Like people will berate you.
People have such strong opinions about this stuff, and it's so dumb.
If a hot dog's a sandwich or what you put on it, I'm like, hot dog. You know, I used to work in when I worked in the grocery store. I worked in the produce department. Our neighbors in the meat department, they said hot dogs are made of lips and assholes. Like that's what they said.
It's like, exactly. It's garbage food. Like people who get all up in arms about what you put on like a bratwurst. You put nothing on a bratwurst. And like, yeah, sometimes I like it that way, and sometimes I like it with a bunch of crap on it. It's my crappy meat thing that is made out of like seven different parts of its ear or whatever. Like I'll eat that. That's fine. But don't tell me what I'm supposed to put on a sausage. Like, if you want to talk to me about like some fine French dining, no, this is the way you're supposed to eat that, sir. Fine, okay, whatever. But like a sausage, we're talking about like German street food. This is garbage. Just put it in your face however you want to eat it and call it a day.
Yeah, like if you said, okay, don't put A1 on like filet mignon or something, like, sure, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, like don't put ketchup on your steak. Okay, that seems fine.
But you're like, but how could you put ketchup on a hot dog? Like, I don't know, it's a freaking hot dog.
Well, and it's like, and it's a hot dog too. It's not even like it's a good like bratwurst or like a kielbasa. No, it's a hot dog. It is made out of butt. Like, it's just butt. Just eat it. Who cares? Like, eat it with whatever you want on it. Put mayonnaise. Drape that thing in mayonnaise. Have it dripping. Just sink it in a vat of mayonnaise and then just eat it like that.
Yeah. Did you ever have the street vendor hot dog wrapped in bacon kind of thing?
Yeah, it's great. It's great stuff.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, those are good. When I was in school, like, they would just be, you know, teams of them outside Coliseum for football games, and we'd come out of there kind of drunk, and it was always good to eat one or two of those. Those were good.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Nice.
No, do that. Do whatever makes you happy. And with respect to a sausage.
Yeah.
And this is another Blue Chew ad.
Well, I guess our next question is along the same lines. Squeals like a pig is the subject. So we're on the subject of eating delicious meats. He says, this is from Rusty. Howdy, boys. Since I love Pac-12 football, I do, capitalize, enjoy your podcast, but confess to getting a bit irritated with the inane questions wherein you are asked to compare coaches or teams or dogs or hot dogs, dead songs or animated flicks. But boys, don't get me wrong. I do enjoy a good laugh. I'd just like to see the quality of those stupid questions picked up a bit. For example, I'd love to hear your vocalizations a la Deliverance of what it would sound like if Woody Dixon or Larry Squat, quote, squealed like a pig. Crystal Ball would also be a kick. So would Swan. Yam, too. Want to give it a whirl? Oh, my God, no. If not, get Leach on the show to do this. Coming from Texas and Wazoo, he doubtlessly heard some squealing and yawlers here and there. Would know how to do this right and proper and all, you bet. Well, there's some weird wordage there. Your pal on the range, Rusty. Okay, so he wants us to do, so from Deliverance.
I don't know if I can do a good squeal noise.
Yeah, I don't think I could either. And I'd have to go back and watch it again. But it was one of the hillbillies guys like saying.
Yeah, right before they're going to rape the dude, right?
Squeal like a pig. Wait, that, did they rape a guy in Deliverance?
In Deliverance, yeah, didn't they?
They had the weird banjo guy.
It's the rape scene. It's gonna make him squeal like a pig.
Okay. God, it's been a while since I'm thinking of Pulp Fiction when they were talking about that, but they didn't do that. They didn't say that there.
Yeah, I don't want to squeal like a pig, Rusty yeah. Fence.
Sorry, Rusty. Here's what you want to do. Call in. Leave a voicemail. The number, if you we say it up at the top of the show, is 424-532-0678. Give us what Rusty wants, squealing like a pig. What it would sound like if Woody Dixon or Larry Squat did that. Maybe Mario Cristobal. Lynn Swan. Mike Yam, I guess. give it a whirl.
Was Rusty the one who had a vendetta against Mike Yam?
He might have been, yeah. He wasn't a big fan.
Yeah. No, he's got a real vendetta against Yam.
He didn't like the way Yam asked questions or something, if I recall correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, and you weren't a big fan of the way Rusty asked this question, to be honest.
There was he was,
maybe Rusty is your Mike Yam. Have you ever thought about that?
It could have been. I think he was trying to write in in Deliverance
in the patois of the southern lands. Yes.
So yeah. it was a little awkward to read. But, yeah, so if for Rusty's sake, if you guys have some voice talent, which I do not, David probably has more, but I don't think he wants to tackle us either, give that a whirl.
Yeah, I can't squeal. I don't think I have that one in me. Like, yeah. What would you do? Like, I can't do it.
I'm going to have to YouTube that scene again and remember it, because I'm not remember it. That was Burt Reynolds, right?
Sure. Yeah. I actually have never seen the movie. I just know it from cultural, that kind of cultural osmosis you get.
Yes. All the stuff. All right. You want to do Hitler Day?
I'll do it. Dasa Samyojana. I'm going to Google that one because he's stumped me.
You want me to do it while you read or no?
No. This is great radio. Okay. Bonds in the rebirth process. So we're talking about something in Theravada Buddhism here. Oh, the 10 fetters. Aha. Ahahaha. It's translated as the 10 fetters.
And okay. He mentions Chris Fetters.
There we go.
Okay.
I was deeply impressed by Chris Fetters filibustering you boys into submission last week. It takes a truly awe-inspiring talent to bludgeon Ryan, of all people, out of specifics about spring football.
I love my spring football.
You love logistics of spring football. I actually snuck in a logistics question on that Utah interview. Could you even handle it?
I was like, I don't know. You were probably like, what the hell? You know, like,
yeah. Unfortunately, that leaves the rest of us the more quotidian task of figuring out what to watch for in Washington's practices next month. By my count, the Huskies are replacing the following starters: quarterback, running back, tight end, right tackle, the only nose tackle, two more starting defensive linemen, strong safety, free safety, both cornerbacks, both inside linebackers. Using either Washington-specific or just general spring ball knowledge, please tell me your opinion on which of these positions fans should be keeping a close eye on in April and which ones you expect Coach Peterson to replace without conflict. Well, quarterback, obviously, because they're bringing Jake Browning back. I don't think that's a big issue. Frankly, I actually, in all seriousness, I don't think quarterback will be that big of an issue because I think whoever replaces Browning is going to be fine.
Yeah. Gaskin's tough. I mean, replacing Gaskin's going to be tough, but...
not top. It's not the top issue. Yeah. Like, I think Ahmed, I think, is going to be good at worst. Maybe it's replacing the overall total production, like who's going to be the second string guy, who's going to be the third string guy. But I think the top tier, maybe Ahmed's 90% of what Gaskin was last year, which I think is still pretty good. So defensively, here's the thing, is they've lost a lot. It seems like probably three or four of the years that Peterson's been there, they've just lost like half the starting group on defense.
Oh, yeah.
And no matter what, they churn out like a top 15, top 10 defense. I just have a hard time seeing system continuity just taking a major step back this year. If I was looking at the way they play, I would say inside linebacker, just from an instinct standpoint, that would be probably the spot where I would be looking the most, because I don't know. I think defensive line, they've been able to plug guys in there who aren't necessarily hugely talented. But I think, I don't know, I could be talking myself into that too, because they've been able to do that inside linebacker as well. I mean, Ben Burke-Irvin was not a highly touted recruit by any stretch of the imagination.
But production was very high. And you feel like you could replace like a Ben Burke-Irvin production, right? Because you know, he wasn't like some five-star guy coming out. He's not, you know, running all over the place, you know, the fastest guy on the field. And, you know, you remember a couple of years ago, Washington had four players drafted on defense, the first like 44 picks, and replaced them without a bat and an eyelid. So, I know, Hithloday, you're probably trying to figure out a way that your Ducks can overcome Washington. I'm still going to be picking Washington, The list doesn't concern me as much, Hithloday. I don't know about you, Dave, but I kind of feel like Chris Peterson's going to figure things out and they'll be all right.
Yeah, I think they'll be all right. I would say if you want an actual answer, I would say probably in order. Inside linebackers would be maybe the top. Nose tackle would be second. Other defensive linemen, third. Running back, fourth.
Probably fourth. I mean, the secondary, that you can put all the secondary if you want to group them together as a whole.
The one thing they've been able to replace year after year is the secondary.
Yeah.
Like, I don't actually have any concerns there. I'd put them all near the bottom. Like, in totality, having to replace the entire starting secondary, yeah, that's a task, but any one position is hard to quantify. And then, you know, probably quarterback after running back or after tight end. Right tackle. I mean, I don't know. I think the issues are probably the front seven on defense. That's probably what you're probably paying the most attention to, followed by running back, followed by quarterback, and then the rest in some order.
Yeah, that's fair. Move on to Scott.
Yeah. Do you want to do this one?
Sure. Questions. Ryan and Dave, thank you for a terrific podcast and going strong in the off season. First off, it's nice to see USC truly earning that dollar sign in the beloved U dollar sign C moniker. The legit way to get those dum-dums into school would have been to put gobs of money towards Helton's buyout. With this new admission scandal, I have to ask, Ryan, why does U dollar sign C hate doing the right thing? That's a very good question, Scott. They seem to just love screwing up time after time after time. And this is a weird scandal that I think is going to get, you know, weirder. I think, you know, there a lot of the defendants are in Boston right now. They were going to put in their pleas. I think a lot of not guilty pleas came in. The big one is because USC has an administrator that was involved, and she was on the take for over $1 million. and allowed them access to multiple sports. And the fact that USC let her basically run everything and no, and she was unchecked, and Lynn Swann comes back and says, oh, we were blindsided by this. Like, it, you know, we're not going to let one person run that whole department again and, you know, and control everything. And I talked to other coaches and they're like, yeah, every, for like football team, like the walk-ons, they had to make sure, they had to go through Donna Heinel, like the person that got arrested, their walk-ons for the football team, they had to make sure they went through her. And sometimes they'd come back and be like, oh, you got these four guys in, but this guy didn't get in. And you don't know why. And they were like, one of the guys told me, like, maybe we didn't get that guy in because she had a spot for somebody else that she was getting paid for. You know, you just don't know. So the fact that someone in the athletic department was involved, now you got to find out, are there more people in the athletic department involved? So yeah, that's, they've screwed up royally a lot, Scott. And it's just kind of like, it's just par for the course. It's, what else are you going to do? Second, please, no more Disney references. All right, we're hearing your thoughts up for everybody. For the love of God, make it stop. Treat it like Pac-12 basketball and soccer questions for a month. That's fair. I don't think we're going to get any more of those. There's enough of an outrage that we're not going to get those. But there's 2 weeks strong of a lot of them, and I think we've backed
up. What I'm hearing is more Disney. People want more Disney. That's what I'm getting from today.
You were always so perceptive, Dave. True false. So he has four questions. So I think they've listened.
This is a perfect amount of true false. Everyone out there, four is a great amount of true false. 25, not a great amount of true false.
So he says, number one, Leach never wins an Apple Cup against Peterson.
True.
Really?
Man, they have not been competitive in these games.
They have not, and that's their better teams have lost, and it hasn't even been good. I'm going to go false, though. I think Leach will do it 1 year when they're not as good of a team and Washington's better, and they'll like sneak in and win one. I think I'm
going
to.
All right, so you're going broken clock theory. Fine.
Broken clock, yes. Two, Harbaugh is out at Michigan at the end of the year.
Let me look at Michigan's football schedule for this season.
I haven't really been keeping up with the Harbaugh stuff. I know there's been talk and he wears out his welcome after a few years, but I'm going to say false. I think he sticks around.
They're also playing Middle Tennessee and Army in non-conference.
Yeah, so, and Urban Meyer's gone. So I think that's a, you know, invitation for him to stay. Three, Peterson is poached by a bigger program at the end of the 2020 season. False. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. And then four, Slick Rick Neuheisel has an adequate amount of gloves. Had an adequate amount of gloves at UCLA. False.
Oh, gosh, false.
Yeah. False.
You just needed more gloves. That's really all we learned there is that you needed more gloves.
Thanks again, and go Cougs. Wait, is Rick doing the AAF, or is he going to do, is he in there?
I think he's doing the AAF, yeah.
The first week I sort of, I don't say I pay attention, but I like watched a little bit, but I haven't like nothing since then. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah. I don't know. All right. You ready for Evan?
This one is
ferocious.
That is the subject line. Hey guys, love the podcast. I'm going to get straight to my point, and it's this. The original They Were Ferocious audio clip you used to play was so much better than the simple one-word quote, ferocious, you use now. The original had that raw human emotion. The shorter clip is devoid of that passion. Also, the beginning of the word ferocious gets slightly cut off in the new one and therefore sounds rushed. Play the one after another and you'll see. Do you still have the original?
They were ferocious.
That was the original. And then?
Ferocious.
He does have a point.
Yeah. Do you know what? It takes time to edit and then upload to my thing and stuff. So it's not, you know, this isn't like, this doesn't come for free. So like for me to make a change, like I have to significantly do something. So yeah. I don't know. But what do you think, Dave? I got them both still. I just didn't delete the old one.
He says the original clearly outperforms the newer version. And I tend to agree. It's just it doesn't fit as aptly, you know?
True.
Like, yes. Because you like to, you know, throw it in there when somebody just uses the word. And we can't do that when somebody just uses the word. But if we're using it as like a descriptive drop, like when we're talking about a really bad game, then They Were Ferocious makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
So maybe we just need to be more disciplined in our usage of the drop.
True. or we give you the board that you can do drops on and you can handle it.
No. I think that would mess with our flow. It would mess with our chi. I'll be so focused on the drops, I won't even talk. It'll be rough.
Okay. Everything is a cool idea if it's more work for me. That's always good. That's always
basically
good.
Yeah. I'm glad you're coming around on that. All right. Nice. I can't be the only one who thinks this, right? So please, let's go back to the classic and get back to talking about the real issues. Disney princesses and Jake Browning's eligibility. All right. Evan has told us. Keep up the good work, he says. He wants more Disney princess talk. I think that's the definitive take.
Well, we've talked about Disney princesses and Jake Browning's eligibility. So we hit his two.
We've hit the two topics.
Yeah. Very nice. Evan from Claremont. Thank you for that. And we got one last one from Anthony. Hi, Ryan and Dave. What are your thoughts on the tournament so far? I think he's talking about
what tournament?
Basketball, I think. Well, it's very chalky, right? It's all like basically Oregon is the only upset in the Sweet 16, and they just stunk, excuse me, at the beginning, but they've won their last like 10 games, so, and they won the Pac-12, so they're really not like a 12 seed. If they just took care of business earlier and, you know, they got injuries and stuff, they would probably have been a 4 or 5 seed. So it's really very, I think it's the most chalk ever, right, Dave?
Can I tell you a secret, Ryan?
You don't know.
Can I tell you a secret?
Okay.
Can I tell you?
Yeah.
I haven't watched a single NCAA tournament game.
No way.
I have not watched a single moment of a single game. It's been amazing.
Really?
And this was at one time my favorite weekend of the entire sports calendar year, and I have not watched a single basketball game.
Man.
It's been amazing.
So Dave's not
I cover college athletics for a living.
So for me, I mean, I'll still watch the tournament, especially I think the first 2 days are my favorite. And then this was like the worst, like, and I was gone all day Saturday. So I watched Sunday. I didn't really get to watch Saturday, but there was just, you know, bunch of blowouts. Like I said, all chalk. I think only the second time ever all the 1s, 2s, and 3s survived. There were some close ones that, you know, guys could have, you know, Tennessee could have lost a couple times. Duke could have easily lost. There's some other schools too, but all the 1, 2, 3s made it through, only a second time. And this is the lowest as far as like add up all the seeds. I think it's like 48 or 49. 12 is the only, you know, outlier. That's Oregon. And like I said, they could have been a much higher seed if they just didn't stink in the beginning. But it's been kind of, for me, Anthony, there's been kind of boring. There's been some good stuff a couple of times, but this last weekend, the round of 32 or whatever was pretty
ferocious.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. Then he says random questions. I can't believe you haven't watched any, Dave. That's
not a minute. It's been so amazing.
We were at a bar. Like my wife, you know, Tennessee's in there, so we went to a bar. Me and my wife, a bunch of people were supposed to go. We didn't end up going, but Bruce Feldman came out. We watched some of the games, and that was kind of fun. So I did a little bit, like a few hours at a bar watching basically 2 games. So that wasn't too bad, but I didn't get to do like the full on. I used to go with friends on a Thursday or Friday and take the day off and just like watch.
I used to take full days off work. Yeah. But like also the East Coast kind of sucks because the games don't start until like 12:15.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, I don't want to stay. I have enough, like, during football season, staying up till like 2 or 3 in the morning. And if I started the day, I'd feel like I need to finish it. I'm not going to stay up to watch Oregon versus UCI until after midnight. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
It is pretty, West Coast is pretty perfect for the tournament because you're talking 9 a.m. to like, was it 9 p.m. or 9:30 p.m.? Like, it's pretty awesome. Like,
well, and it was key day drinking in college, too. Like, the NCAA tournament, you just get up at like 9. Start drinking at 10. It's great.
Some bars have to open earlier just to let you.
We're not in favor of that. We're not endorsing that here on the Podcast of Champions.
No.
Don't drink, kids.
Yeah. Anthony has a couple random questions. What would be harder for you, to tell someone you love them or that you do not love them back?
Definitely you do not love them back.
Yeah. For me. Like, I think it's a lot easier to say you love somebody, or if they say they love you and you have to tell them you don't love them back. He capitalized every first word. Is there significance to that?
No idea. Oh. But also, if you're operate on the assumption that you're like having to tell a lie either way, it's easier to lie in the positive than it is to lie in the negative. The truth of either is I think the truth of telling somebody you love them is fine and great. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
That's never hard. The truth of telling somebody you don't love them back, now that could be bad, unless it's like gotten very toxic.
I think some people, though, they might have a hard time expressing love. So maybe that's where Anthony's coming from on this, where he'd say, like, you know, is it hard for you to say that? But
I mean, is it hard for you to say that, Ryan?
No, dude, I'm good with that. But it would be harder for me to turn somebody down, basically. So
you've never told me that.
David, I need to tell you something. I'm thinking these were, so he put random questions for these. I'm thinking he copied and pasted them from somewhere because of his other sentence does not have every first, the first letter of each word capitalized. These do. So I'm wondering if it's from some book or something.
I don't know.
And the other one, the last one, if you could run one business, which would it be and how would you change it? Thank you, Anthony.
I would run Amazon, and I would break it up into many, 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 many different parts, and have those run by other people and not have it all be one company.
So you're using some political slant for this, like personally. So that would be the most important thing for you is to...
It would be either that or transition one of the major multinational oil companies into green energy. So also a political angle, but probably one that's a little bit more relevant to our times.
So would that be like me saying I would want to run PETA and make sure they serve veal sandwiches at all their...
No, because that's just cruel. I'm talking about doing something that would actually benefit the world. Okay. That's just like triggering the libs for no reason there.
Nice. I'm trying to think of what kind of company... you know, when you see, like, me knowing USC as well as I do, and like, I'm like, could I be the president of USC? Like, I don't have a doctorate or anything. I have a master's. I don't think that really matters. Like, could I do a worse job than some of the people have done? Like, I could
probably, Not a chance. No, you'd be fine. You'd be great.
I could probably run that, you know, or the athletic department or something. Like, I think I could do it.
The hidden secret of life is that nobody is good at their jobs, and anybody with, like, I don't know, like the on-the-job training it takes to be good at like being like a file clerk is about the same as it takes to be good as like a CEO. It'd take you 2 months, you'll be fine. So yeah, no, it's all the same dumb stuff, and people are the same dumb people no matter how much education they have. And to do any job, it's mostly people skills unless you're doing some major like quantitative stuff. So yeah, if it's just like people work, which is basically what being a CEO is, yeah, you'd do fine in like 2 months. You'll be great.
I think I've always, you know, with the engineering background, I like the Silicon Valley type of companies. Like, you know, that'd be kind of cool to run something like that. But I don't think I'd be qualified to do that. But that'd be kind of neat to run one of those. Like, if you're running Facebook or, like Dave said, Amazon or Google or something or Apple, like that'd be kind of neat, you know, to do.
Yeah, run one of those things that has like a bunch of perceived value, but like a ton of like not actual value, or like one that like is developing AI for cars that doesn't actually work or something like that. That'd be cool.
Yeah,
it'd be a ton of fun.
Or like Richard Branson's business, those seem fun. Like I would want to be like a fun owner, you know, like
are any of those profitable?
Like Mark Cuban, you know, like, you know, owning a basketball team or something, like stuff like that. Like
And like allowing like rampant like sexual like misconduct in your organization, that sounds great.
Dude, are you always just looking at this?
I think all these people, I think every single one of these people is scum. Every single one of them.
You know, so you're saying we need more monopolies, like older, middle-aged white men running everything.
Let's get monopolies. Let's get monopsonies. Let's get just like single provider of labor, single provider of goods. Let's just do the whole thing. It'll be great, though, because it's private instead of public, so it's fine.
How about this? What if we ran, like, the Communist Party in, like, Soviet Russia? Like, would that be pretty cool?
You know what's better than a company? A party. Who doesn't love a party?
True. You know, But do you think, like, okay, there's idealism, like there's an idealism to communism, right? Like where it's like everybody's the sick collective and all that kind of stuff. But there's always like a scumbag running it that like murders people and does all the things. Like if you had some,
oh, communism's super dumb. I mean, communism doesn't work. But the thing is, the response to that can't be unfettered other opposite version of that is definitely going to work, because this also doesn't work. I mean, when you allow Amazon to grow this big and encompass all these different industries and basically be a monopsony for booksellers, among many other things, I mean, it just doesn't work either. Regulate it, you know, go back to some trust busting of some sort. I don't think anybody is necessarily advocating for a command economy, but something akin to turn of the 20th century trust busting. You know, those Roosevelt guys seem to be doing a nice job. Maybe go back to something like that instead of allowing these people to just have whatever, full control over our economy. I don't know. Just an idea. Just asking questions.
I'm a big advocate of, oh, crap, we're out of toothpaste. I go on Amazon. I have it tomorrow.
Well, no, and that's the thing. It's like, of course, I like it that it delivers like anything I want within 2 days. But, you know, at the expense of all of the other things that it takes away. You know, I don't know.
All right. Well, we got a Dave political rant in there. That's good. You know.
Hey, we've got one more. You ready?
Oh, we do.
It's a fantastic capper for this episode.
Okay.
This is from Oliver. It's in response to his question from several weeks ago. I don't have a question. I just want to say that I'm sorry for asking a rhetorical question about Disney princesses that spawned hours of original content. Also, fire Larry Scott.
Thank you, Oliver. Yes. It's funny how things can start. It's sort of like that little marble at the top of the mountain, and it picks up, you know, debris on the way down. It becomes this avalanche, and the Disney princess became an avalanche that just took over the podcast for, I don't know, maybe 4 hours of our time.
Yeah. But, no, it's just a small thing starting an avalanche. Like, I don't know, like an obscure German economist coming up with, you know, a critique of, you know, the state of the economic world. And that rapidly turned into revolution all over the world. You know, it is what it is.
You're on your libertarian, like, soapbox today, huh? Am I right?
Just living the dream out here.
I should be able to tell, like, after, like, what kind of rant you go on. I'm like, I bet you this happened to David. I would say, like, you were, like, stuck in traffic from a car accident or something. I think I would be right.
Yeah, I was I was in an hour. My commute home is usually about half an hour, and I was in an hour and 10 minutes of traffic today. It really, really added a little something to my day.
Now, you told me that, but I could have maybe guessed it from some of the things.
I think you might have been able to, yeah. I think you might have been able to. A little ornery today.
That's all right. All right. We'll wrap it up. Hopefully, just a little behind the scenes, since we told you everything else about our lives. We're doing, not for the first part of the podcast, but for the second part, where it's just David and I, we did a dual recording. So hopefully the sound is a little better. And it's good, because even David, when I was listening to you, there would be some cutouts when we were talking on Skype. So, but you recorded your own audio. So once I put it together, it should, hopefully it'll work well. So I'm curious. So let us know if you feel like the sound quality, at least for the second half of the podcast or the second two thirds or whatever, let us know how you think of that. But I think it'll be good, Dave.
Yeah, it felt good. I'm looking at my levels and they look loud.
Nice.
They look great.
Nice.
So yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. We are the podcast of champions. We're getting through. I think we have a few schools left for our spring reports. So if you have any more questions, I think we might do Washington State next week. If you have a question or two, we'll try to remember to put those in. But thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.